Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'm thinking of naming Chaz Gandhi.
Man,
can't go wrong.
Is Otto Porter on there?
Some other names of interest. Bob Marley might be interesting.
His connection to Washington is so well known.
Bob Marley loved
Washington. Chris Rock. Dave Chappelle, Danny Glover.
Dave Chappelle's local.
Chappelle's likely, yeah.
Dave Chappelle is local.
Yes.
Yep. That's right. Ellington High School grad.
You know, Denzel.
That's legit. He's not local.
No, I'm just giving the
Denzel's
name.
Philly.
Duke Ellington.
That'd be good.
Can I take the line out of the movie Where the White Women At? Am I not on this ballot?
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then, plausibly live, again from an undisclosed third floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We are on the air. We got Chris Saliza, we got Michael Kornheiser, we got Nigel running the board and doing news. We will have Michael Wilbon, and we're joined by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who famously said to Chuck Todd, when Chuck Todd asked him in a Capitol Hill interview, why did you grow that beard, you said?
An homage to Tony Kornheiser.
So you could be on this show. Your wish is our command. You're here.
I don't even know where we are. It's just so undisclosed. They put a bag over my head and drove me here.
That's how that works.
That's policy. Yeah.
That's how that works.
It's like something from Zero Dark Thirty.
So we had... That's a great movie.
That's a good movie.
That is a great movie. So we had in the Washington, D.C. area what is called conversational snow with a look of confectionery sugar, and it has no effect on driving. The only annoyance was it got on your windshield. You had to scrape your windshield. It seemed like it would just sort of rub off with the first windshield wiper, but in fact, you had to scrape
mine. It was frozen on there.
Yeah,
I had to get the scraper out.
You're the guy that's driving down the road with all the snow just drifting off
me.
Your car, causing accidents.
Well, it's less than an inch of snow. It's somewhere between a half inch and an inch of snow.
Totally did that.
It didn't even. The dog just looked at it and said, "This is what you think is going to bother me," and it did not. So we've got that. We're supposed to have a little bit more snow later in the week, but nothing consequential. There's a lot of minor sports stuff happened over the weekend in terms of not having the NFL, because this is the lay week between the NFL championship games in the conference and then the Super Bowl. And we didn't talk about football last week, and we'll eventually talk about it. But with this, they had the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl, almost all All-Star, to me, other than the baseball, where you are pitting a great pitcher against a hitter, all the other All-Star games are inconsequential for me. There were two All-Star games yesterday. There was the NHL All-Star game, which is interesting in the sense that they played 3-on-3. There was the Pro Bowl, of which I watched one play. Tom, did you watch either?
I was told to come on here ready to break down the NHL All-Star game.
The man who knows the show.
Because there can't be one person from Arkansas in the NHL. It's not possible.
I doubt so.
No.
But no, I watched neither show yesterday.
Yeah, I watched like 10 minutes. I didn't even understand the NHL because they were separated into four different teams. Did you watch any?
No.
You didn't watch it? Well,
wait, there were four teams in a hockey game?
Yeah.
Well, not on the ice at the same time.
It was very confusing.
You know what was good, though? They had the 100 greatest hockey players of all time in a ceremony. And they didn't rank them 1 to 100, which, why would you? Because Gretzky is one. But there you could see Gretzky and Lemieux and Messier and Orr and people like that.
Ron Francis,
former
Whaler.
I don't think he was there. I watched
Ole the goalie?
No, I watched, I don't know, 10 minutes of
Jason
it.
Jason Wirth.
I watched 10 minutes of it. I didn't care about it. I watched literally one play of the Pro Bowl. Did you watch anything?
No, I didn't watch the Pro Bowl at all. I watched the Georgetown game. I watched the Villanova UVA game. And I watched the fifth set of, because I got up to watch it, of Federer and Nadal.
Michael, did you watch anything yesterday?
I watched the Villanova UVA game, and I watched the end of the Farmers Insurance Open.
I watched
the young Spanish guy won. Yeah,
John Rahm Rodriguez.
The golf was interesting in this regard. At when I picked it up with about an hour or so to go, there were five people involved in the lead. I had not heard of any of these people. There was a guy named John Rahm, who I later found out, even though he went to Arizona State, and I had no idea that he's Spanish-born and raised in Spain. I did not know. He won. He won by making a putt off the green on the last hole for an eagle, and it put him to minus 15. Nobody could catch
him. It's an impossible putt that broke four ways.
Yeah. There's a guy named Finau, F-I-N-A-U.
Tony Finau.
Never heard of him. A guy named Pau, P-A-U.
Gasol.
No. Or Pan, P-A-N.
Never heard of him.
Someone named Streb.
Have heard of him.
Never heard of Streb. Someone named Rogers who had
Patrick Rogers.
See, these
who
five...
lost his drive over the last six holes and couldn't find the fairway.
You know, so I
Fescue.
Nobody was in it, and Brant Snedeker had, you know, wasn't making a choice. So I watched some of that, but I didn't watch much. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time doing it because we have a senator here who likes, by the way, the PTI show and is, like everybody else, a devotee of the genius, the Oracle, Eric Rideholm. So I should ask, growing up in Arkansas, because I didn't grow up in Arkansas, you may have noticed from the accent. Growing up in
Long
Arkansas.
Long Island, Arkansas. No,
absolutely. Yeah, it's all the same stuff.
Middle America.
I'm just assuming that you are much more of a college sports fan than a pro sports fan, unless you are a Cowboys or Saints guy.
I was growing up, but actually as I've gotten older, I've gotten away from both basketball, which I played when I was a kid, and college sports. Now more of a pro sports, in particular, Major League Baseball, NFL. And sad to say, I am a Boston Red Sox and New England Patriots fan.
Did you come to do that in college?
I did. I was in school during the Parcells Bledsoe Super Bowl when they lost to the Packers, and then I was in law school for the first Belichick-Brady Super Bowl.
So when you go back to Arkansas, which you have to do because they're voting for you, how is it received that you are a Patriots fan? I mean, because around the country, everyone hates the Patriots.
Well, any sensible person recognizes the greatness of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, and yeah, that you should follow their wisdom for life, not just for football. Well, no, of course, I'm an Arkansas Razorback football fan as well. I mean, that Arkansas Razorback football is the main event. As you say, Dallas Cowboys are the primary professional
team
there. So that's the market you get in Little Rock TV if you don't watch the Red Zone. But it's also, you know, Jerry Jones was an Arkansas Razorback football player with Jimmy Johnson. You get some on the edges of the state, New Orleans Saints, Kansas City Chiefs, Tennessee Titans. But Razorback football is the primary sport.
More than basketball. Even though basketball's
been good. You know, they won championships back in the mid-90s. Yeah, Nolan Richardson, Corliss Williamson, and those teams. So it's popular, but no, football still rules the roost in Arkansas.
All right, so I'm going to ask you a question. I remember talking, we've talked about the great Jack Vardaman here, who Michael knows and I know. And Jack Vardaman is a very, very famous and accomplished lawyer in town and was very high up in the PGA for a number of years and is a friend of ours. And he is from, if I'm not mistaken, Anniston, Alabama. And he is a crazy fanatic Alabama football fan. But he went to Harvard. And I asked him this. I said, was there any problem? I mean, when you go to Harvard from a place like that, is everybody happy for you? Or did they say, what are you doing? For some historic context here, and you will know this, James Baker, one of the five smartest guys to ever live, he went to Princeton out of Texas, but made sure to go back to law school at the University of Texas, figuring that his career would be in Texas. Vardaman went to Harvard. You went to Harvard.
It's a bit of a culture shock for me getting there. Now,
My
sister was 2 years ahead of me. She was at University of Arkansas, so I would go up in high school for Razorback football games. And then I got to my first Harvard football game, and resembled more a high school game than a college game. The band came out on the field. I was like, this is a practical joke, right? I think I left at halftime to go do my laundry. Yeah. You know, John McCain likes to say when he introduces me that I went to Harvard, but I cleansed myself of my sins by joining the Army afterwards.
Right. Was everybody happy that you made that decision? Vardaman says it changed his life forever. It utterly did. I mean, he roots for Bama, but it changed his life forever. Do you feel the same way?
No, I mean, I came from a very small town, about 3,500 people, graduating class of about 80, maybe 10 or 15 of us went to college. So, you know, most of my friends, you know, were supportive of me. I had this dream that I was going to go play basketball at Harvard. You know, they don't have scholarships, and send in a tape. Back in those days, you actually had tape that you'd send in. And the assistant coach said, yeah, you look like you could contribute to the program. You know, have open tryouts show up. So I showed up, and about 5 minutes in, I realized that contribute to the program was being a practice squad loser. Yeah, yeah. I was a high school hero and a college zero.
Yeah, so
they may not have scholarships, but they definitely recruited, and I was not recruited. So I played 1 year on the junior varsity team, then hung it up after that.
But you got to wear a uniform that said Harvard.
I had to wear a uniform.
Who's your friend who did that? Who's your friend who wanted to play JV baseball?
Charlie Griffin.
Yeah,
I think he did play JV baseball there.
Just so he could
just get the uniform.
Just so it would say
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. It's just very cool to say. Yeah. You know, to say. In fact, the uniforms would be great if instead of saying Harvard, they just said John. That would be such an inside, be such a wonderful inside joke. You volunteered for military service after law school.
I did, yes.
This is not the common path.
Not the most common path for Harvard Law grads. So I was in my last year at law school when the 9/11 attacks happened, and that really changed my direction in life. So I wanted to rush out and join right away. A lot of my friends who were in the Army or had been discouraged me from that. They said, you know, you don't want to make a lieutenant or a private salary with law school loans. And once I started taking home about $450 a month a few years later, I realized they were right. So I finished school, worked for a couple of years, pay off my loans, but then I joined the Army and put the law behind me. I didn't go in as a JAG attorney, I went in as an infantryman. So I've been clean for about 13 years.
Two tours.
Yeah, one in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. And between those two tours, I was here in the Washington area at Arlington National Cemetery.
It is an unbelievably sort of varied background. I mean, to me, it seems unbelievable. When did you think to yourself, you know what, I'm going to continue public service, though not this way. I'm going to run for office.
My first race was for Congress 5 years ago in 2012. And in 2011, just, you know, a series of coincidences happened that made it possible. Arkansas had long been Democratic, the kind of Bill Clinton effect lingering when most of the rest of the South and Mid-South had gone Republican. 2010 was a big election year when Republicans nearly achieved parity. And in the 2011 redistricting cycle, my home county was moved out of a Democratic-held district into a Republican district, and there just weren't many Republicans there and, you know, angling to run for Congress, so I ran and won. And then same thing happened in 2014. We had taken the majority status, but still there weren't a lot of Republicans who were there and ready to run for Senate, so I ran for Senate. You know, that won't be the case again in the future. You know, anytime in the future in Arkansas, like now, like many states like Oklahoma or Texas, if there's an open House or open congressional seat, you'll have, you know, half a dozen Republicans running for it.
So I'm much, much older than you, and I remember that there have been people in the past, I think, had aspirations to become president. Certainly recently Mike Huckabee had aspirations. I thought, if I'm not mistaken, Pryor had aspirations to become president.
Dale Bumpers.
Right, and yeah, so there have been some. But
Bill Clinton.
The one who did it was Bill Clinton.
Hillary Clinton.
So he did it. Well, she tried.
We don't claim her. Right, she's Chicago. Quite like Bill Clinton and Mike Huckabee.
So he's yours. So what you must have some, regardless of him being on the opposite side of the aisle, you must have some special feeling for Bill Clinton.
Oh, I respect Bill Clinton's skills as a politician, just like Mike Huckabee. Both, I mean, Mike Huckabee obviously didn't succeed in the election, but both are incredibly skilled politicians, great candidates. You know, Mike Huckabee, like Bill Clinton, came out of nowhere in 2007 and 8, as Bill Clinton did in 91 and 92, without a lot of political advantages to win. And Huckabee, you know, almost won in the Republican primaries. I think some of that is growing up in the Arkansas political culture, and it helped them coming from that political culture when they broke onto the national stage. Just made them very good candidates.
But they tell you, I mean, one of the things everybody tells their children is you can be anything you want. But if you grow up in Arkansas before Bill Clinton, you don't think you could. I mean, what would convince you? I mean, it's Arkansas. This is not a state that produces a grand history of presidents before. So I would assume that changes your life.
I think it changes the view of a lot of, you know, young kids in Arkansas. Rural towns don't come from a lot of wealth or a lot of privilege. Same thing watching Mike Huckabee, but, you know, same thing watching someone like Sam Walton as well. You know, starting a five and dime store to become.
So what do you want to be, a greeter at one of the big Walmarts?
I may do that in retirement. Yeah. But the sense that you actually can, you know, come from a town like I did and achieve great success, and largely through hard work and effort.
I was fortunate enough, I went to the last big party at the White House, and standing online in order to get in, I was standing behind Mark Cuban. So I assume that you will run against Mark Cuban to be president at some point.
I think he's going to be running against Donald Trump in 4 years, right?
Yeah, but, you know, you never know. I mean, you would. I assume that's aspirational for you.
Well, you don't ever know. And one thing that...
You wouldn't, you know, turn it down.
One thing the 9/11 attacks taught me, the aftermath and the various twists and turns my life has taken, is that, you know, it's great to have a plan in life, but it's even better to write your plan in pencil. You never know what's going to come down the path for you. If you set your life up, you know, with the single ambition of being president of the United States, you're apt to be frustrated. Only 44 men have done that in 230 years. So I think you should take the opportunities you're given at hand to do as much as you can. And I'm very, very blessed and privileged to be serving in the Senate. We'll see where the future, what the future holds.
This always was a possibility of Washington Post blogger status.
Yeah, you could always do that.
Hook you up there.
This was the easy stuff. Later in the show, we're going to ask about Trump and, you know, and the airplanes and not letting anybody in. This was all the easy stuff. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, Nigel will do some news, right? Do some news?
That's right.
Okay. No, Will Bond.
Oh, no,
Will
Bond's next.
See, why don't you? You need to correct
he's
me.
Testing
when I'm wrong.
He's there, testing
there's
you.
There's a board for you to look at right here.
I mean, there's the board is right there.
Yes. Well, I can't see the board.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Books ad. This is simple stuff. It's simple ordering. There are no gimmicks. It's transparent pricing. There are no hidden fees. There's no endless upsells. There's no additional care and handling fees. There's no bait and switch product. With our farm, Books, what you see is what you get, okay? These are cut fresh flowers. They are sourced from sustainable, eco-friendly farms. Did I see a television ad that they got these things off a volcano or something like that? They're a better value. Your flowers last longer. Your dollar goes a longer way. Yes, we have farms located on volcanoes in Ecuador. Oh, well, that must have been a tough sell.
That sounds
we're gonna start selling. Yeah, you see all this junk on the side of the mountain? We're going to plant stuff in it. Didn't you see The Martian? This is going to work. Amongst the hills of Colombia and along the California coast. Do you like farm-to-table food? Well, you'll love our farm-to-table flowers. The Books Company delivers to all 50 states. If you need something last minute, they offer products with next-day and same-day delivery. That's good. They're branded upscale packaging with note card and craft paper. There's a never-forget subscription offer with a regular reminder and delivery on special dates like birthday and anniversary. There's randomized surprise bouquets sent to somebody X times a year on a random basis just because. It's called the Just Because subscription. You're such a sweet guy for sending flowers for no reason at all. We take customer service seriously. We want to make sure that you're happy. If we make a mistake, we'll make up for it. Their words, not me. They are the we in this. And their farms adhere to responsible labor practices. We have farms that are fair trade certified, as well as farms certified by a third-party agency such as Veriflora. Veriflora, that's a combination of verify and flower. You like that? I took Latin in high school. And the Rainforest Alliance. The farm direct supply chain ensures that stems are not wasted, while other suppliers can waste up to one of every three stems. So be a hero this Valentine's Day. Save 20% when you order early. You get free delivery on weekdays when you register at Books.com. These are farm fresh flowers. Books.com. Books is spelled not sort of like you think it is. B-O-U-K-S, as in Q-S, rather, as in bouquet. B-O-U-Q-S. It's hard for me to say Q. B-O-U-Q-S.com.
Nailed it.
That's three times. Offer is 20% off your order. That's not bad.
It's a good deal.
Use the code Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh, it's got that Let It Be feel, doesn't it? It's got that McCartney yes. feel. This is Steve Treichel out of Los Angeles. His band is called the Radar Brothers. His song is called Horse Down. That, you know, like, that's got that ruffian feel. It's a little early in the morning about that. Wilbon joins us now. Where are you physically now, and when will you be here today?
I'm in Arizona, and I will be in Arizona for the show. And
oh, okay, so you're not coming home today.
If I'm allowed to travel, then I guess I'll be back in Washington tomorrow.
Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow. This was an interesting, inconsequential weekend in the sense that there was no football, there's that terrible break, and there's a whole bunch of other things on. There was a Pro Bowl, and even I only watched literally one play, and I didn't even know why I landed on it. I would say that the biggest story for people of our age was probably Federer. I was really happy that Federer won because, as you know, I don't think he can ever win another one. I don't think he'll ever get to another final. What were your thoughts about that and also the notion that he and Nadal both went five sets, two matches in a row?
Yeah. Tony, I didn't get a chance to watch it because I'm in a crazy time situation with a lot of travel this weekend, and I didn't get a chance to watch either of the finals. I said this on the show whenever that was, Friday we last convened. I was just thrilled that the four people who were in it were in it.
Yeah.
And I didn't care who won. I mean, it would have been a nice story if Venus had won. I didn't think she was going to beat Serena. But
not unless Serena tanked.
She wasn't going to tank, yeah. but Federer and Nadal, I don't have a horse in that race. I love watching both of them as I have watched, you know, my whole life, great tennis players from the time I was a kid when it was Laver and, you know, Stan Smith and Arthur Ashe and up through Connors and Borg and McEnroe and all the greats. Obviously Nadal and Federer. Federer may be the greatest male tennis player ever. I mean, I guess a lot of people would say that, probably win the majority of the vote. So I didn't care who won those two matches. I just loved the fact that we had this, these four geezers in the in the semifinals. See, that was it to me. I am not as slavishly devoted to pro football as you are. There's plenty of sports as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I watched one play and I landed on it mistakenly.
Well, I'm not talking about that. When you say there's nothing going on, there's plenty of sports going on to me. And it's refreshing. I as I've been telling you since November, the college basketball season for me has been great and enhanced because I do have a horse in that race.
And they're good. They won again, didn't they? They beat somebody badly, or they were up by 20.
Beat Indiana yesterday. Beat Indiana last night, and it's our longest Big Ten winning streak, I think, since 1933.
Really?
Our best record since the 1930s at like 18 or 19-4. We'll probably be ranked when the polls come out, which I don't want.
You're going to get in. You're going to get into the NCAAs, right?
Well, Tony, there's, listen, this is the same conversation as, you guys got the best team all summer with the Cubs. You got the best team.
We did.
And I would tell you, I don't want to have the best team. I want to win. And so I think we will get in. I mean, we're good enough. We're a good team.
Well, what's the history of the Big Ten?
We're second in the Big Ten right now, second.
All right, so what is the history in the Big Ten of, let's say, finishing 500 in the Big Ten or two over 500? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 10-8 is something that we're 7-2 right now. But, Tony, we've also got Maryland.
All right, okay, so
two games against Purdue, Wisconsin. I mean, we've got some games in the back end that you can play well and still lose.
Right.
And so, I think the 10-8 is the magic number. But if you go from 7-2 to 10-8, does the committee dock you because you had a bad second half?
No, they want you in because you've never been in.
I don't know that they want
you. Sure they do. Sure they do. You've never been in.
I think
celebrate
your record gets you in. Or Joe doesn't get you in. But it's a thrill to watch them win these games and double-digit games. And we play Purdue, who was ranked, on Wednesday night. And that's one, to me, Tony, where you can't say somebody's in at 8-2 because you got too much time to go, too many more games to play. But I think if we beat a ranked Purdue team in West Lafayette Wednesday, that really says something. That says something to the committee. And so in addition to just the college basketball season in general being great, and I'm talking to you from Arizona now, where people here think that their state basketball team, the University of Arizona, can win the whole thing.
They're good.
Yeah, it's a team that looks like they could go the whole route.
Yeah, the problem is that Sean Miller, who was a lovely point guard at Pittsburgh and who we both think is a very good coach, has never been to the Final Four. He has had very good teams for a number of years, and he's never gotten to the Final Four.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who never go to the Final Four.
There aren't that many.
To the Final Four.
There aren't that many who were really good coaches. The other one is Mark Few, but there aren't that many who've never been to the Final Four.
Sean Miller hadn't been around that long.
I'll bet he's coaching 10, 12 years.
He's been around as long as Jim Boeheim. I mean, he's been...
Well, Jim Boeheim's won championships.
But he hasn't... For the longest time, people have said that Jim Boeheim wasn't any good because he couldn't get to the Final Four.
Junior said that. Nobody else.
Well, the point is, Sean Miller's not 60 years old. He's a guy whose career is still developing.
He's a spry 48.
Yeah, he's not a kid. He's not a kid.
He's not a kid. How long has he been the head coach of the University of Arizona?
I'll bet you 8 to 10 years. I'll bet 8 to 10 years.
Okay. Let's see.
What?
Accepting the job on April 6, 2009.
Okay. 8 years. So, 8 years.
He was at Xavier before that.
Did you watch Kansas and Kentucky? Did you get to see that?
No. I was working in Kansas.
What were you doing?
Doing a show on something we had to call ABC.
Right. So what was it? That was for a pro game?
I'll
make it easy. Yeah. I'll make it easy for you.
I sort of have a career, which I, for the last 12 years, have been doing doing pregame and halftime shows. Perhaps you've heard of some of them.
So I'll,
some of the people that I've heard Magic Johnson.
No, I've heard of that, but you always used to sneak in the Kia reference. Remember, you used to like. Did you ever get a free Kia as a result of that?
No,
you wouldn't.
No,
tell the truth, you wouldn't drive a
Kia. Those Kia commercials, where they have these guys who are all seem to be, 4 foot six, and they are bouncing into some meeting room or a store, and thinking they are superstars.
It does make me laugh.
So you
those commercials are laugh out loud commercial. The guy who goes in and asks for the size 15 shoe or the 19 shoe, and the guy who goes in the board meeting, they are just laugh out loud funny. Oh my God, those commercials!
So in order, you drive a Mercedes, you drive a BMW,
I don't have a BMW.
Well, what about a Cadillac? Cheryl has a Cadillac, right?
Cheryl has.
So if somebody came to you and said, "Look, I'd really like you to drive a Kia
SUV." Is a beautiful car.
Would you drive it?
Yeah.
Would you get rid of your other cars?
I don't need any extra. I'm not trying to add cars.
Okay, well, some people do.
It's a zero-sum game some type situation.
All right, so I'm going to give you the pro basketball question that I care about because it comes up every single day and it drives me crazy, and it is, of course, Carmelo Anthony. And it involves somebody who is a longtime friend of mine, but somebody who you may admire, Phil Jackson, more than any other coach ever. It's very possible you do.
I do.
Why is he so ineffective? And he is. It's terrible. And what should they do with Carmelo Anthony?
Well, ineffective, I don't know. I mean, in pro basketball, Phil's been at this 3 years now in terms of this. He's not. I admire him more than any coach. He's not coaching.
Right. I know.
Different gig. And they should trade him. And they're going to trade him. It's a matter of when and to whom.
Yeah.
They're going to trade him. It may happen today. I mean, if I'm the Clippers, the reason I have to go ahead and get Carmelo is because I want to keep Chris Paul. I'm not going to keep Chris Paul as a free agent if I keep Blake Griffin, because that's not working. That's oil and water. And if I'm Chris Paul, I say, if you give me Carmelo Anthony, yeah, we can make this go. We can also maybe keep J.J. Redick. And the other reason the Clippers can't keep Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, because it would cost $414 million, $207 million each, I think, for them.
So
Ballmer's got a lot of money.
Yes, he
does. But I don't see him paying those two guys. Now, so Carmelo at a mere $150 million, and they don't even owe him that much, is a bargain basement deal compared to what Blake Griffin's going to get.
Would you trade? See, I wouldn't do this. If I was the Clippers, I would not trade Blake Griffin.
They're not going to trade Blake Griffin for Carmelo.
No, I wouldn't do that.
We're talking about next year, Tony. You're getting Carmelo. You're not going to win this year.
Right.
If you get Carmelo, you're not going to incorporate him with Chris Paul on the shelf for another month. And you can't even play Blake Griffin and Carmelo together, right, although you would for the rest of this season if you got them together. You have to play them. Neither one is going to come off the bench. That would be a disaster. But you're looking ahead. You're getting him now because you want to still be viable and relevant as you go into next season. So, yeah, you go ahead and get Carmelo now. Carmelo does help you this season, but they're not going to beat Golden State or San Antonio, neither one of them.
Did I read that the Warriors beat them by 46 points?
Yeah.
Am I making that up, or did I read that?
No.
46?
They beat them by 46, the same margin they beat them by in a preseason game.
46.
They put up 142. Yeah.
46. That's unbelievable.
46. The key sequence, Tony, is at the end of the half, it's already going to go. It was an 8-point game. Right. And all of a sudden, the Warriors have one of those things where they go three steal, layup, foul, steal. And it's 21 points at half. And so with 4 seconds left, Steph Curry has enough time to take two dribbles and get to the basket. 4 seconds for guys that quick. Instead, Steph Curry just sort of casually measures from half court a shot. Takes it. It doesn't touch the rim. It swishes like he's shooting a three-footer on a Nerf hoop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he goes into the Mark Jackson airplane spin chest first on the floor.
Soccer. Looked like soccer goal.
At the half.
Yep.
And it just underscored, how much Golden State hates the Clippers. because why? Well, they were rivals anyway. I mean, the Clippers beat the Warriors 3 years ago in a seven-game series, a great seven-game series. But the Clippers were the team that most famously said, yeah, they got lucky. They won a championship, but they got lucky. All the members of the Clippers. Yeah, Warriors got lucky. And since then, the Warriors have beaten them eight straight games. The Clippers managed to steal like a Christmas Day game somewhere in L.A., but they just want to humiliate them. Beating them is not enough for the Warriors. And so that to me is the backdrop of that 46-point beating.
Is it possible that the Clippers really have no heart?
I don't think it's about no heart. I just think that one, they don't have Chris Paul. Their best player's not there.
46.
Which render DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin much less effective because right. They don't know what to do. They have to get right. The ball from somebody. So that's a huge thing. And the other thing is the other team's much better. The Warriors are much better than the Clippers are now.
They are. All right, I'll get you out of here on this. You've said all along there's no problem with the Cavaliers. They had lost 6 of 8. They've just beaten the Nets, a terrible team. But the Thunder, a pretty good team. Not great team, but a pretty good team. You stay by your position that there's no problem there at all, right?
Or none.
Okay.
None. There's no problem. And look, just like, I mean, again, these are dog days. These are the dog days. Getting to the All-Star break, limping into the All-Star break in both sports. The Capitals aren't having that problem in the NHL, but several other teams are. And it happens in the NBA. Toronto's having it right now. They've lost 6 of 7. San Antonio lost at home last night to the sorry Mavericks. This is what happens. It happens every year. I know that people aren't paying attention to most things in America unless it's pro football, but it happens every year, forever. And it's not going to. This is not an exception, and it's going to happen to Golden State, meaning not that they're going to go 6 of 7, but they'll probably lose 3 or 4 at some point. They could even do it at home. It's just it's an 82-game schedule. And so, no, there's nothing wrong with the Cavaliers, as evidenced by the last couple of days. And, Tony, the one thing the Cavaliers would do, if you're LeBron James, and you are, and I learned this from sitting with Magic, and when he was a player, and how he would obsess over Larry Bird, obsess. And Bird admits to obsessing, waking up in Boston, getting the box score. Back then, you had to get a box score, which, of course, nobody even thinks of now. And Bird would look to see what Magic had done obsessively. Well, this is what LeBron's doing. He's looking at Kevin Durant and have the best season of his life. He's looking at Klay Thompson. He's looking at Steph Curry. He's looking at Draymond Green. He's looking at them going, my God, we gotta beat them again. We have to beat them. I'm angry. I wake up. They're beating teams by 46 who play in the playoffs. What do we have to do? Let's go now. And if people don't understand this, they're not paying attention to LeBron James plays for one reason at this point, to stalk history. He doesn't want to hear that Michael Jordan's better. He doesn't want to hear that Magic Johnson or Kobe are better. He wants to win the championship. And so the frustration that goes with that, and in addition to, you know, like I say, going to the whip hand, that's what the process of what we're seeing with the Cavaliers. And so if they're healthy, nobody's beating them, no matter how many times they drop a game or two in the regular season.
All right, I'll see you later over the big screen. Goodbye. Talk
to all right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Postage rates have gone up again. That means trips to the post office are an even bigger hassle. It is so crowded. But thanks to Stamps.com, you don't have to worry about it. Just use Stamps.com to automatically calculate and print the correct amount of postage for every letter or package you send. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. They'll send you a digital scale, which automatically calculates the exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. And Stamps.com saves you money. They give you postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including 3 cents off every first-class stamp. Wow. Anything you can do at the post office, you can now do from your desk. You will never have to go to the post office again. And right now, if you use my code TONYK, you get this special offer. You get a 4-week trial, and that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and then type in TONYK. That is stamps.com. Enter TONYK and sign up today. With stamps.com, you will never have to go to the post office again.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sort of begins like Dusty Springfield, doesn't it? Does it sound like Son of a Preacher Man a little bit at the beginning? This is Craig Elliott. Do I have that right?
That's right.
Of Lubbock, Texas, the hometown of Buddy Holly. This is called Runaround Blues. Michael, if people want to submit their music for us to steal and play forever and ever, how do they do that?
Temporarily borrow. They can send it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And if, for example, all the young senators in the United States Senate wanted to buy Tony Kornheiser shirts or mugs, how would they do it?
I would direct them to shop.tonykornheiser.com.
Of course, if you do young senators, that's Senator Cotton. That's it. We just sold one shirt.
Everybody's young to me.
Young. At least, younger.
At least two were sworn in before I was born.
Yeah, exactly.
These things happen. All right, Nigel has news.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony, and we will start off with the NHL All-Star Game weekend. I know you guys were talking about that earlier.
Elsewhere in the NHL.
One thing you may have missed, though, was the celebrity portion of the, like, you know how they have the celebrities play in the basketball game?
Oh, that's not like the Kevin Hart.
Yes.
It's so awful. They can't. They're terrible. They can't play. The only guy in the celebrity basketball game who wasn't a former pro who could play was Arne Duncan.
That's right.
Because he was a pro.
Well, he was a pro.
Yes.
Yeah, he played in
Australia. Secretary of Education.
He took your spot at Harvard.
He did take your spot.
Yeah. Secretary of the Boards.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, in this,
this
celebrity hockey game,
who?
Justin Bieber was playing.
Well, he's Canadian.
He's Canadian, lifelong hockey fan. And he was out there, and he made the mistake of trying to dig out a puck in the boards.
And he got checked.
You remember
massively.
Chris Pronger?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he went after?
Giant.
Chris Pronger is a big guy.
Chris Pronger.
He killed
checks
the
him, and then the drives him into the board.
Oh, great.
I am looking at this picture right now. Bieber's face is pressed up against the glass
Fantastic.
In agony while Pronger is laughing.
That's right.
I didn't know Chris Pronger, but I'd like to think he would have been a believer.
Yeah, that's
yes,
great.
Exactly.
Oh, wonderful.
So there you go for that.
Good.
The big story of the weekend is in the NFL. The San Francisco 49ers set to
hire. This is interesting.
John Lynch as the general manager and sign him to a six-year deal.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the two words that you should immediately think of when this happens, and those two words are Matt Millen. Matt Millen was, Matt Millen's a friend of mine. Matt Millen was totally qualified to be the general manager of the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions were historically a team where the Ford family didn't involve themselves at all. I mean, they hired people and they let them do whatever it is they wanted to do. Matt Millen had nobody saying you can't do this, and Matt Millen failed tremendously. I mean, they were just worse and worse and worse every year. And Matt Millen, I felt, I'm not saying uniquely qualified, but completely qualified.
Oh, sure.
He'd been on a bunch of teams. He had four or five Super Bowl rings.
He had been great.
And he was a great talker, and he was great on TV. John Lynch is great on TV.
Yes.
He really is. He's great on TV. I don't know.
It's sort of out of nowhere for a franchise under the current ownership team that has been, let's say, unpredictable, to be kind, right? I mean, like
under Jed York, they've been awful.
I mean, like, they, you know, that no one thought the who was the guy before Chip Kelly? Tom Sula?
He lasted an hour.
Guy, as I've said, that guy
looks
like
you're... And then they fired Harbaugh. Now, Harbaugh's crazy,
right.
But Harbaugh's
but a great coach.
Really good.
He's really good.
Tom Sula, then Kelly, who was always sort of, I mean...
And first he hired, when Jed York first got the job, when he was about 18, he hired Mike Singletary, who was
disaster.
A high school coach.
Right.
He was a high school coach.
So it seems like an odd... It's like the Paul DePodesta move. You know, like well, we'll put a baseball guy in a football role. I mean, maybe, but for a franchise that's struggled, who has done a lot of unorthodox things, up to and including hiring Chip Kelly, it seems like another unorthodox move when all of their other unorthodox moves have not panned out.
What do you got?
Maybe he's an advanced metrics guy, and they're just trying to get Wilbon's goat.
Yeah, Wilbon who hates metrics. To me, I wish him all the luck in the world. I'm good at this. I know nothing about the restaurant I bought. And that's why I go to the general manager, and I say to the general manager, I say, Bob, I'm going to be in here a lot. I'm going to have a lot of ideas for you. just nod your head, and when I leave, just ignore forget all that.
Sounds
I have
good,
said
Tone.
Right, we'll get right to that.
Yeah,
right.
Let me take a note, Tone.
If there were a sport though that you feel like you could be a good general manager, what sport would it be? Like basketball? Would it be baseball?
I don't think I could be a good general manager for anything. First of all, you have to the unknown skill is the math skill. You have to know all the contracts. This is very, very hard. Like Mike Rizzo of the Nats. He basically has to be a mathematician. He's got to figure out. He's got to look ahead. He's got to understand how all the contracts work together. I don't know. I couldn't. No, I'd be lousy.
I think football is uniquely difficult because of the roster size. I mean, I'm not saying it'd be easy to do any sport, but it seems to me the smaller the roster size, so that would make the NBA the easiest theoretically and the NFL the most difficult with baseball being up there. You just have to manage so many.
Well, I'll tell you, there are certain positions where you say this position has an advantage. And you see this in baseball with catcher. There are so many major league managers who were catchers. In football, the two positions that I think have advantage are center on the offensive line and DB, and especially safety. Because they have to watch the entire game. If you talk to safeties, that they give you a perspective that you don't get from like here's a position rushing the passer. They know nothing about the game. They're instinctive. They rush the passer.
So the Giants running backs, shouldn't name LT.
No, running backs don't have to do anything. They just don't have to.
Right.
They don't have to know anything about it. But John Lynch was a safety, wasn't he?
That's right.
Yep. Where did he go? Did he go Ohio State or USC?
I think USC, but I don't know. I mean, I identify
Stanford,
him.
Stanford, I think, actually.
Oh, Stanford?
Yeah, yes. I identify him with the Buccaneers.
So then he spent time out there.
Yes.
So then he spent time in Northern California.
He's from Illinois.
And he went to Stanford.
He went to Stanford. He went to California. And
apparently, he's the one that called up Kyle Shanahan and said, hey, I'm interested in this job. What do you think? And Kyle Shanahan said, that's not a bad idea. Let's call
him. Okay, but they have two young novices running a disaster. Yeah. It's a disaster.
And the ownership group, right? The ownership group is still the same. He's from Illinois, but went to high school at Torrey Pines in Carmel. So he grew up in San Diego.
That's the other Torrey Pines.
By the way, drafted as a right-handed pitcher by the Florida Marlins in the second round of the 1992 Major League Baseball draft.
So,
these guys are unbelievable.
Aside from being president, if you could be GM of any sort of sport, what would you be?
I'd probably take baseball myself just because I enjoy it the most. I agree that football may be the hardest sport because it's a flow sport, not an episodic sport like baseball, and just the sheer roster size, the complexity of their cap and so forth. After I was a high school hero and college zero in basketball, I did have the winning intramural team in my law school, and one of my teammates was Sashi Brown, the head of the Cleveland Browns.
Yes, wow.
So we hope.
But he's an analytics guy, which drives Wilbon crazy.
Sashi's very smart, very capable. I think his first job was with the Jaguars. He was a counselor there, and then he moved on to Cleveland.
I mean, the Browns now have because DePodesta is there, right? I mean, the Browns now have a bunch of analytics people.
How did it help them this year at 1-15?
Well, they got
long-term
Robert
rebuilding
Griffin.
Plan.
Trust the process.
Yeah, exactly.
Joel Embiid.
We heard that with the 76ers, and that guy lost the job.
I mean, Lynch was a pretty good player as well.
Yes, he was.
Very good.
The history of great players going on to either on-the-field management or front office management is mixed.
Slim.
Yeah.
It's usually John
Elway is probably the best example of success in the front office. And I think football is better when the 49ers are good. So I hope John Lynch's success out there.
I think football is better when the 49ers are good and the Packers are good and teams like that have been around for a long time. The 49ers were an unbelievably great team. And Jed York is of that family. He's of the DeBartolo family. But what he's done has been awful.
Yeah.
He's just been awful. I mean, in the same way that
Ursay.
One of the stories I like to tell my soldiers from back when I was in the Army, or tell my staff now in politics when things are really intense, and having a level head and a sense of poise will serve you well as a story in the 49ers Bengals Super Bowl when Joe Montana comes out to the huddle and they've got to go 92 yards and everybody's all tight and he points in the stand and says, hey, isn't that John Candy?
So that loosens everybody up.
College basketball, big game. We'll go to Bangor, Maine.
No, we won.
Where the Binghamton Colonials take out the Maine Black Bears, 65-54.
A big road
win. It's a big road win.
Does Maine have any wins this year? Not many.
See, Maine is 5-18, 1-7 in conference.
Okay, so we've beaten in succession.
Timmy Rose, call me Derek, had career best 20 points for you.
We've beaten Stony Brook, the hated rival. Yes. We beat Hartford, I believe, and we have beaten Maine, but I think we lost. We lost to New Hampshire, which is a win we should have gotten.
Yes,
these games are attended by as many as 800 to 900 people.
Yes. Is that the second conference win?
Our third.
Third.
We're 3-5. We were 0-5, and now we are 3-5.
So a 3-game conference winning streak. Yeah, 3-5 by math.
Tommy Amaker has never recruited anybody at Binghamton, which it shows you the separation there.
Speaking of teams that had their third win in conference.
Speaking of hot teams, Tom.
Well, Hoyas win. They beat 11th-ranked Butler 85-81 on the road. They improved to, yes, Chris, 3-6 in the Big East now. 12-10 overall.
Look out, world.
So the Villanova game, Virginia game, I'm passing over because it stopped.
Segued right out of it.
Yeah, it's not that important.
Anyway.
Villanova beat Virginia at the buzzer.
That's right.
Villanova got a tap in by some kid, DiVincenzo, who had no other baskets. That was a very good game. First half was bad. The second half was very good. The Kansas-Kentucky game was very good. So
Did you see the Duke game? Duke was down.
I saw they were down, and then they won.
Did you see Grayson Allen in that game?
There was a big scrum, wasn't there?
I'm not a huge fan of Grayson Allen, but he now is in this situation where everything he does. So he takes a three and misses short and runs to the corner to try to track it down and sort of pulls the guy who's boxing him out in front of him. So he's now in front of the Duke bench. He totally, to his credit, walks away. One of the guys in Wake Forest, who's not the guy who he has fouled, comes over and bear hugs him down to the ground on the Duke bench. And they just give that guy a technical. I was like, how is that? How can you be allowed? I mean, you got to throw a guy out of the game. You can't tackle someone out of nowhere. But so he was just, and it was on the road. You know, I mean, like he has become, through his own actions, but he has become it's like watching someone who's
but
about
now
to
people
explode.
Go on television and basically what they say is, let's just deport him. Okay, let's just get him out of the country. Okay, I mean, and every single incident is designed to bait him into an explosion. So, what are we talking about, really? It does not any longer seem reasonable. What else you got?
The Wizards, I know you want to talk about them. They win their fourth game in a row, 107-94 over the Pelicans. Anthony Davis, if he just had a little bit of help from his friends, the Pelicans might be better. He had 36-17, but they fall by 13 points.
He had 50 earlier in the year and they didn't win as well. The Wizards are a very good team right now. John Wall had 18 points and 19 assists.
Yeah.
That's really a lot. Their starters had 96 points. I've been sitting here all season. I've been wrong all season about. You watch the Wizards at all? You don't care about
them. Not much.
Okay. So my point.
You and the rest of the country.
My point all year has been that you cannot win in the NBA without a bench, that your bench has to contribute about 25% of your points. The bench last night got 11, and they won, easily, and they won on the road. And I may be completely wrong in this. They had all five starters. Had double figures. Starter scored 96 points.
That's pretty good.
Can I make an Otto Porter point?
He's done very well. Did he go to Georgetown?
Oh, that's an interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that, but really. Now that you mention it. Otto Porter, I just checked this because I heard it this morning on a competing podcast. Otto Porter is number one in the league three-point percentage.
Yeah. He doesn't take that many, but yeah.
46.8 on threes.
No, he's been great. He's been fabulous. I've been wrong on everything about them, and when John Wall now says that they could be in the Eastern Conference Finals, sure they could. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely
sure
they could.
Sure they actually
probably
could at this point.
Don't want to pick them to beat the Cavaliers if they get that far, but yeah, I could see them getting that far.
So when Michael was in school, we used to go to I went to a bunch of football games, and I saw Ryan Fitzpatrick play for Harvard. Do you root for him? Do you have that feeling where you root for anybody who went there? You didn't know him. You're old.
I wish him well, except when he's playing the Patriots.
Right. Then you wish. Then you hope he gets.
He was a few years after me. Matt Burke was there with me. Matt Burke, long time offensive lineman. Yeah.
Forever, like 15 years in the league.
Mm-hmm. Very successful player.
And ended up at Baltimore, I think.
That's right.
I think he played on a Super Bowl team.
He played mostly at the Vikings.
Yeah. Amaker was not there. Amaker was after you.
He was after
who
me,
was
yeah.
the. Who's the head basketball coach? Do you even remember?
Name escapes me.
Amaker's good.
Amaker, well, good. That was a step up. I mean, yeah.
No, Harvard sports have improved quite a lot since I was there.
The great local story in Washington, D.C. with Harvard is James Brown. James Brown was recruited by everybody in the world. James Brown was an All-American at the Matha and the best player in the city and was asked to integrate to become the first black player ever at the University of Texas. And he went to Harvard because he had gotten a note from Senator Ted Kennedy, who said, well, you ought to think about going hard. And he went. And how's his career? Did he have a good career?
A pretty good career. We had a great point guard when I was there, my year, freshman year, from DeMatha as well, whose name escapes me too. But he was one of the guys, and I saw it the open tryouts. I realized I had not been recruited. He had been.
Just one other thing. I watched a bunch of the Arizona-Washington game yesterday, and just because you mentioned DeMatha, the kid from DeMatha, Markelle Fultz,
yeah, he's good.
Is, I think, going to be the number one overall pick in the draft.
But didn't he shoot like eight for 23?
He was terrible. Because against those guys, against Arizona, when you don't have a lot of other pieces, it's difficult. But that kid is
everyone says he's
the
number one
overall pick.
Big enough?
He's 6'4", I think.
Okay. I look at Melo Trimble and I think to myself,
no,
he's
bigger.
He's bigger.
He is bigger physically, like broader and taller than Melo Trimble for sure.
Okay. All right, we're good?
That's it.
That was a very good newscast.
Yeah.
Okay, it was okay. It was all right.
Wasn't great.
We'll get out of here. When we come back, we will have Old Guy Radio, and there will be more questions for our special guests or guest.
That
special.
Let's be honest.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read. Somebody here today was thinking about getting Blue Apron, and there was...
Could be anyone.
Could be anyone. There was some discussion in the House, and it went the other way. But I'm going to...
Let's just say that Blue Apron would have been fantastic before I was a married man and had a wonderful wife who knows how to make everything from scratch.
And if you have that, that's great. But for the rest of us, and I've done Blue Apron, and I like Blue Apron, and I'm going to get it again when the weather isn't quite as cold. You get to make this. Everything... I'll just go off book for a second. Everything that you need to make the Blue Apron meal comes in a box and then a little bag of knickknacks. It's all there for you. There is a color-coded step-by-step recipe guide that, of course, you can keep if you want to make these things again. And in my experience, and I've said this like 1,000 times, I really hate sweet things with meat or chicken. I don't like that. And yet, when I did the Blue Apron, I did all of those things, and I ate them, and they were very, very good. It doesn't mean that I would ever go to a restaurant, or I would even go to Chad's, and I would say, please give me this. But I made it myself, and it was fun. The only warning I have for you is if you have a three-pot situation, you need to have somebody make this with you, because you just can't handle three pots at the same time. But it's actually very good, and it's really lovely.
Butler?
Yeah, Butler.
If I had a Butler, I would do that. If I had a chimp.
Chessie.
That's interesting.
The dog was anxious to help, but the dog got sidetracked by eating a cotton fish and ripping it to shreds.
Story of my life.
Within 7 minutes of being handed this $35 giant cotton fish, there was no fish.
Yeah. That'll happen.
Just ripped it apart.
That's her Blue Apron.
It had noise. You know, they've all got the noise makers.
Right. Yeah.
And she could not. She got it. She ripped it out. She tried to eat it, and that was it.
She was trying to get the knickknacks.
Yeah. Blue Apron, very affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. There's variety. You choose from a variety of new recipes every week, or you let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year. You will never get bored. They're flexible. You can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose what fits your need. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. It's easy. As I said, you get the step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients. They can be prepared in 40 minutes or less, and there's a guarantee. The freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they will make it right. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TonyK. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Do not wait. It's blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. It's one of the greatest songs ever written and performed. The Shirelles had the original hit, and it hit number one 56 years ago today. This is Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. It was written by Carole King, who started out in life as Carole Klein, and Jerry Goffin, and they were, I believe, married at the time. This is the Carole King version, I guess, from the Tapestry album, which has to be 45 years old also. In terms of critical commentary, this speaks to, I just love the lyric. It speaks to insecurity and bravery and the great scare of young love. It is a great, great song, and she wrote it. Sometimes when you write the songs, you don't sing them the best. And nobody would argue that Carole King was a great singer, but this is pretty good. She slows it down. It's really, really good. That says, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? We've got Tom Cotton here, and I would be crazy if I didn't ask these questions. There was over the weekend, and I know you have a statement on this, there was over the weekend the great flap at airports throughout the country as to who gets not just in but back in. Some of these people, many of these people, had no reason to believe that they couldn't get back in, and they carry green cards, which to my knowledge means that you are accepted as a citizen in the country without actually being a citizen, but you are not. You have no particular restrictions. There are so many demonstrations. This reminds me of when I was in college. There are demonstrations, except in college, the demonstrations weren't all over the country. They were, you'd have a march because there was no Twitter. There was no instantaneous communication.
Facebook, no ability to organize.
You couldn't do any of these things. So you had to put posters up months in advance and you had to clear schedules. I mean, the dividing line for people, you know, generationally for me is, of course, the internet. I look at Chris Saliza and I look at Michael Kornheiser and I look at Tom Cotton, and they are constantly going to their machines with more than one finger. I'm an ape.
Well, yours is in your car. It's a finger. Car phone.
I just have one finger, and I watch them, and they can carry on like Saliza can. I'm sure that Cotton and Saliza have texted each other while they're sitting in here because it's just so much easier
to do. Can you believe this guy?
So
just tolerate him and smile.
So what happens is, so you can have demonstrations that appear to be almost spontaneous all the time, and they were in a lot of airports in the country. And the first question I have, because I'd love to know your position on it, but I'm in terms of the presidency, it just seems to me like Donald Trump really likes the noise. It just seems like he likes all of this stuff. He knows what's going to happen, and he likes it. Am I crazy about
it? He certainly seems to have a very high tolerance for yeah. controversy.
Noise.
In a way that most politicians do not have. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, you want action? Here's some action. I mean, anybody who gets up and tweets at 6 a.m. knows what's going to happen.
As you know, and one of the slowest places in government is the Senate. So I've often thought I'd love to be a fly on the wall when Mitch McConnell tries to explain to Donald Trump things like cloture and
right.
the preparations.
He has no time for any of these yes. things.
And frankly, sometimes I share his impatience with some of the tortured procedures of the Senate.
Which is, I think, what younger people do most of the time. And then it's a question of what will come first. You will ease into that rhythm, or you will be able to conquer it. I mean, I think that Washington, for me, I've always believed this. I know that a lot of people like to run against Washington, but I've always believed it's one of the most idealistic places in the country. I think there's a lot of people in their 20s and 30s that come here that really want to change things.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
And they believe in it, and they believe in the country,
yeah.
and they want the country to be better, and it's... You know, sort of like going to med school. Like
yeah, a lot of the people who work for me, you know, young people in their 20s and 30s who came to work in Washington because they truly do believe in America and they want to make a difference.
So some of your colleagues in the Senate on your side of the aisle, we expect the other side of the aisle to be against everything that happens because that's what we just saw for the last 8 years. So just why wouldn't it be reversed? But some of them, I think, are worried that the new president is somewhat divisive. Very divisive, and that there is all this noise, and there are all these executive orders, and it's leading to chaotic reactions. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, there has certainly been a lot of controversy over these first 10 days, but I think some of that can be chalked up to, you know, the kind of hair on fire frenzy that you see from some quarters of the media, and this order that the president made on Friday is a good example of that. I think there is some confusion, as you mentioned, Tony, about green card holders. Secretary of Homeland Security John Kelly cleared that up over the weekend, that green card holders will be permitted back into the country. There's also the issue, anytime you'd issue an order like this, you probably have several dozen aircraft in the skies coming to the United States, and how to account for the people who boarded a plane legally but got here and this had gone into effect. And you can't, you know, put it out days in advance, because then you're inviting, what the president has said on Twitter, bad dudes to rush into the country. But to call this, you know, say a Muslim ban, when it's really a ban on people traveling from states that lack the institutions to give us proper vetting information, I think is very misleading and also very divisive. So I think a lot of the controversy we've seen over the last 3 days has been driven because there's a lack of understanding of what the president did. Now, some of that rests on the shoulders of the White House not doing a better job of explaining it in the media, not doing a better job of briefing reporters on background or talking to members of Congress. But by and large, I think it was a sensible step given the threats that we face from these seven states.
To go back a little bit, during the campaign when Donald Trump was running, he did invoke the name Muslim a number of times. So, I mean, you know, we talked about Grayson Allen before, yep, and how people look at, yep, him in a certain way. You could lay this at the feet of the newly elected president.
It was back in December of 2015, right after the San Bernardino attacks, when he called for an outright ban on Muslims. He later, you know, said that was not going to be the case. He called for what he says is extreme vetting. We're still waiting to hear exactly what he thinks extreme vetting will be. You know, again, the issue with these seven states, though, is that five of them are basically in a state of anarchy. You know, they lack the state institutions to help us vet people coming from their lands. Iraq is, you know, a large portion of its territory is run by the Islamic State, and Iran is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. But, you know, when you exclude Indonesia, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Nigeria, the five largest Muslim countries in the world, it's hard to call that a Muslim ban. Or if it is, it's a very ineffective one.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is that the pushback that I've seen so far, and I part of me thinks that this is fair, and then part of me thinks it's not really fair, but it's a question that you would have to answer because you're going to be asked this question, that these terrorists who have successfully come to the United States and done terrible things are basically from Egypt, from Saudi Arabia.
That's right.
And what am I leaving this, out?
None of the seven.
And they are not. Yeah.
None of so the seven countries are currently have ever been tied, right, to it, a terrorist attack in our country.
And, you know, some people over the weekend were pointing out where the 9/11 hijackers came from. But, you know, that's been more than 16 years, mm-hmm, since they, mm-hmm, came to this country. And a lot of those states have changed their practices. You know, I sit on the Senate Intelligence Committee, so I'm privy to a lot of information that's not public about the way countries like Saudi Arabia and Egypt and others cooperate with our security services and the practices they put in place because of 9/11. And what some of those states have in common, like Egypt, like Saudi Arabia, like the United Arab Emirates, is that they have very strong state institutions and we have a very close cooperative relationship with them, as opposed to, say, Yemen and Somalia, which are essentially in a state of anarchy.
So the larger question for me, and this is just for me, and I wouldn't attempt to speak for somebody else, is I see all of these demonstrations, and they seem to be very sincerely held beliefs by people who are saying, you can't do this. This is not in the spirit of America. This is just not who we are. How, you know, does that fall on deaf ears? Does somebody answer that by saying, yes, it is not who we are, but in this particular time, it's who we're going to be for X amount of time? Do you worry, as somebody in a very select group of only 100 senators in the country and who are designed to have most of the legislative power, do you worry that this is going to rent the country, that this is just not the way to go?
Well, I heard from a lot of our Kansans over the weekend, and I'd have to say that most of them supported what the president did. They thought it might have been introduced and implemented a little more effectively, but most of them supported it in principle. You know, my heart breaks, like most people do, when they see pictures of those poor kids in Syria who have been killed. But in the end, the best way to handle these situations is not to invite millions of people to our shores, but help them control their own lands. I mean, about 18 months ago, my wife and I were at a Syrian refugee camp just a couple miles south of the Syrian border in Jordan. And we met with a couple dozen refugees, a lot of them in their 20s with kids, young kids our age. And one of them said to me, so, you know, Senator Cotton, 10 million Syrians don't want to go to the United States. They want one Syrian to leave Syria so they can go back to their farms and go back to their homes. So the way to solve this is not the way that, you know, some of those protesters would say, welcoming so many of these refugees to our shores, or the way, say, Chancellor Merkel did 18 months ago in Germany, throwing open the doors to Europe and all the chaos that has brought to the European continent, but to rather to get ahead of these events in places like Syria or like Yemen or like Somalia or Libya to prevent them from happening in the first place.
I said after the election, I went on this air and I said, don't even listen to me anymore. I barely have my toes in America. I have done very well. I live in a big city. I really don't represent the rest of America. But as someone who concedes that, do you worry? Should we be worried? Should we be worried that among all this noise and among all these, not all the campaign promises, but among all this, what appears to be really scary division, that we're in for a bad time rather than a good time in the near future?
Well, it's better to be united than to be divided. And I'd like to see the president fulfill the promises that he made, you know, in his victory night speech and the thank you speeches after the election during the transition, and in the inaugural as well, that he wanted to be president for all the people and he wanted to try to unite Americans. That's going to take some time. It was a very divisive campaign in some way. Some ways, he's a very controversial figure. In the long run, though, what matters most is results. And if in 2 years and 4 years, the president has delivered on most of these promises, creating more jobs with better wages, keeping our streets safe, defeating some of our enemies like the Islamic State, then the American people will reward him. If he doesn't, then they'll look somewhere else.
You write politics. You want to say anything?
No, or? I think that's right. I think the senator is right there. I think Donald Trump didn't divide the country, but by partisanship. I mean, every election I've ever covered from Gore, Bush through this has been divisive. He's just, it feels as though people are more pushed into the, there's no one who says like, I'm not really sure how I feel about Donald Trump. You know, he's not someone about whom there is any gray area. I think the senator made a point earlier that I think is hugely important, which is most politicians are, broadly speaking, controversy averse. It's in the nature of a job in which you are dependent on people electing you and liking you, broadly speaking, right? He is the opposite of that. And I would say not just controversy, courting controversy in what he does, but installing controversy in his White House among his aides. There's all these stories already coming out, like, well, it's Steve Bannon and Reince Priebus and Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner, and this one doesn't like this one and this one. And you think, oh, this is chaos. How could this happen? And like, it's happened because he's knowingly put, this is what he likes, chaos, dissension within the ranks, and he comes in and makes calls. I mean, you know,
one of the greatest people I ever worked for, Ben Bradley, used to call that creative tension.
Right.
I don't know that you want to sit through it all the time, but it produced a wonderful newspaper. Now I can move on to something that's very important to me, which is car to go. What is this? These little bitty cars.
Oh, yeah.
Little bitty white and blue cars, car to go. Are they like rent a bicycle? Because now they're adding Mercedes. Do you know what this is? Do you ever use those?
I never used them. When I first got elected 4 years ago and got a little apartment up on the hill and didn't have a car in Washington, I thought about signing up for one in the abstract, and then I saw one parked on the street, and it was smaller than a golf cart.
You don't want to be in that thing.
No, you definitely don't want to be tooling down 495 in that thing.
How do you...
I think it's like those city bikes to go that we all hate so much.
You would need a credit card. You would need a credit card at some kiosk, and that immediately is going to disqualify you.
And you can just get in a car.
It's an app.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That'll you're out.
Yeah,
you can just get in a car.
How do you unlock the door?
I don't know, but it is via.
You're
going to
get
app.
A Mercedes, like those things. Well, now you go, who cares? But a Mercedes.
Well, it's run. It started in Stuttgart, and it's run by Daimler. I mean, it's run by the. Like,
right.
The Mercedes thing is not terribly surprising to me.
They're shifting up to the Mr. Tony scale of the market.
Now you're interested.
41 cents per minute and without parking charges, fuel costs, or annual fees. So it's literally an on demand. I do not know how. I'm looking to
Michael,
see
you're
how
young.
You,
did you ever rent one of these?
No, I have a car.
Okay. Well,
use the app to unlock the car.
This is so far use beyond Tony's abilities.
No, this is a Faraday box type situation.
Magic. Do you know what? I've seen those. Those are smart cars.
Yes.
I've seen them on an interstate. That's crazy.
Yeah, you
that's
should
insane.
Not.
If a deer would have hit you, you'd be blown over seven lanes. You cannot.
No.
There should be a law against those being on the interstate. They should just be in neighborhoods.
It does not appear to be something you would want to be, you know.
They're so tiny. There's no back seat.
No,
there's nothing.
Not.
It's like
no.
Your solstice.
What are you like, about 6'5"?
Yeah.
You can't fit
no,
in
I
those.
Don't, I can't get into one of those.
Can't so, sell so in my
who,
solstice.
Who refuels these Cardigos?
I don't know anything about it.
Because at least with the computers. Bike shares, they go by every night, they hose them down, they take
do
them
they?
In for maintenance.
Is that a job?
Yeah. It's actually great because you'll see them. They have sort of computer programs to figure out what locations around the city get more traffic because you have to make sure you distribute the bikes to where people need them.
What would you be more comfortable driving in that or a self-driving car?
I will not get in a self-driving
why?
Car.
Why?
No, because that's crazy. I would rather drive
I want self-driving
myself.
Cars tomorrow.
But no, you'd have someone to talk to with a self-driving car.
I don't. Would I
that
talk?
Is true.
You
somebody's...
use OnStar. That's basically, you know, another voice in the car for you.
I like to call. Everybody knows when I call from the car.
Hello?
That I'm just bored.
Yes.
I'm just bored. But I don't hold the phone.
No,
I observe the law. I played golf twice this weekend. It was freezing. It was craziness. I played golf. Do you play golf? Do you do anything athletically anymore?
I used to play a lot of golf back in the day. I started, because of the Army, started running marathons, and that kind of conflicted with golf.
And are you now a runner?
I still run every day. I haven't run a marathon in probably 4 years. Hard to balance with politics and a family.
So when you run... What goes through your head? Like, you don't, you're not.
That's when I listen to the Tony Kornheiser show.
Well, that's wonderful. That's a great thing to do. But do you work on speeches? Do you work on positions? Do you not do any heavy lifting?
No, I mean, part of the reasons why I listen to the podcast when I run is to get away from work. But sometimes I'll think about longer term things, you know, legislation that I'm working on.
Well, don't listen today because you were on.
I know. I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow morning.
By the way, speaking of marathons, this bloke, Michael Wardian, completed the World Marathon Challenge, 7 marathons, 7 continents in 7 days.
What?
In 7 days? No.
In 7 days.
Well,
with an
crazy.
Average time of 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Nope.
That's yes.
No, thank you.
So you have to get on an airplane at night and...
Yes. Yeah, they do that. Runner's World will do this every few years.
Yes.
You know, they get some corporate sponsor, get a jet, fly you around going from east to west to take advantage of the time
I knew,
zones.
I think I have this right. My great and dear friend from high school, Nancy Serafini, her son, John, is a graduate of the United States Military Academy. And he climbed the highest peaks on all the continents. But he didn't do it in 7, well, he couldn't do it in 7 days. So that's 180 miles worth of running.
Something like that.
Are you physically okay? You haven't had operations on your knees or your hips or anything
that? No, I've been fine all along. Yeah. I mean, you know, marathoning was very good for me in the Army. Let's just say, before I joined the Army, I thought, you know, soldiers, you know, they're like professional athletes. They get paid to be in top physical condition. So I started running marathons. I overshot the mark a little bit.
Yeah.
I would think so. Most of my soldiers, I remember at the Old Guard, most of my soldiers, they much preferred going to the gym to get some bar muscles for the Georgetown bar scene rather than going out for a 5-mile run.
That's what you do. If you have a trainer, you say, can we lift the boy weights here?
That's what I do. 200 push-ups before I went out.
I can tell that from Saliza.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. We'll come back with a jingle and with the mail. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks. But don't send in faxes.
Jason Fuse with a new mailbag theme. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Michael Wilbon for coming on. Also to Senator Tom Cotton for coming in studio with us. Tremendous career mistake for him. I also want to thank our sponsors
today. So long, ambition.
Boots, Blue Apron, and Stamps.com. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you do listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Jeff Eisenstein, who signs himself as Chicago Little. My name is Jeff Eisenstein. I work for United Airlines here in Chicago. I am planning a one-day space-available employee trip to DCA on the 10th of March for the sole purpose of going over to Chad's for lunch. I'm looking forward to my little lunch adventure. Could you tell me which is the best metro line to take to the restaurant? It's the Red Line, right?
Red Line.
Yep. Red Line to Friendship Heights. I'm planning on wearing... We want no purple line. I'm planning on wearing my new T-shirt and ball cap if it is warm enough outside. Thanks for a great podcast. I listen to it every afternoon on my ride home.
It's tricky, though. Make sure you take the Jennifer Street exit at the Friendship Heights station.
Okay, and you're right there at that point.
Talk about information for life.
From Brendan Steenburgen in Columbia, Missouri. Last week, you spoke about the retirement of Brent Musburger. He was my favorite for many reasons, primarily a personal one. I used to be an instant replay official for Big 12 games, and at Mizzou, our booth happened to be right next to the TV booth. Every time he came to Columbia, Brent always had the local favorite, Shakespeare's Pizza, delivered. He had a favorite in every town. In 2010, I worked up the nerve to say hello and pronounce my affection for him when we crossed paths in the hallway connecting our booths. Brent's response to the shower of compliments was, "Want some pizza, kid?" And I proceeded to feast with him and Herb Street in the ABC booth. They were both so down-to-earth and welcoming. Afterward, Brent called a hell of a game as Mizzou upset number one Oklahoma. Big game, Bob Stoops dropping again.
Nice visor.
Big moment of the night had already happened for me. From Mike Flannery in Roanoke, Virginia, Roger Federer's career record versus Stan Wawrinka is 18-3. Just a little short of Wawrinka beating him all the time, which I believe I said.
We might have done that wrong.
Thanks
we
to you and the crew for helping me with a 12-hour drive today from Orlando back to Virginia with the family. My mother-in-law was also with me and the Little Littles. I couldn't have done it without you. My recommendation for a new name for Chad's is the Trampolining Bear. It never gets old no matter how many times you see it or say it. It's a lot of signage. Yes. A lot of signage.
Yeah.
Randy White from D.C. I sent an item to Mr. Saliza's attention from Amazon to help decorate the new digs. Unfortunately, I couldn't add a note with the order, but I know that it will mean a lot to Chris and likely remind him of the room he grew up in before heading off to the Loomis Chafee School for the rich and famous. Enjoy and have a great show. Did you get this?
I don't know what it is.
Okay, we have
I order a lot of things from Amazon. Great company, by the way.
Marcus O'Shea. Who owns it?
Huh?
Marcus O'Sullivan.
That's immaterial.
In Phoenix. My son had another visit from the Tooth Fairy. We throw in a buck and some random loose change underneath his pillow. None of these $20 visits. While he was putting the change in his piggy bank, he remarked about all the pennies he'd accumulated over time. My first comment was, maybe we can take 25 of those to the bank and turn them into a quarter. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage shot me a look of incredulity, which made me realize that maybe I'm letting this podcast seep into my real life just a bit too much. From Tom Hirsch, who was a chef from Aspen Hill, Maryland. There may be a website for Donnie Simpson golf stories out there, but here is mine. I was a member at Argyle and played with Donnie midweek frequently. We teed off as a twosome, and on the second hole of the par five, I hold a wedge for an eagle. Donnie said, "That's amazing," and I just said, "Well, what did you think I was aiming at?" He flashed that amazing laugh till he fell over. Classic. Donnie Simpson, he will plague. If I played over the weekend, Donnie played twice.
54
over the weekend. From John Provenzano in Washington, D.C., should we be referring to what Sheena Parveen is currently doing to Chuck Bell as a reverse Tom Kieran? Sheena Parveen.
Oof, look
she's
out.
Getting some run.
She is, and she's on there sharing the stage with Chuck Bell.
Yeah.
And you know what it looks like to me? It looks like an exit strategy for Chuck Bell.
Wally Pip, why don't you sit down for a minute?
It'll be fine. Garrick's not going to play that long.
Charlie Burtz in Springfield, Virginia. Images throughout the media of long lines at airports, passengers withheld, travel blocked, angry immigration victims all overwhelming. Apparently, it turns out they're just wanting to share their displeasure with the name business class.
I mean, it's better than first class.
Greg Harold from Knoxville, Tennessee. Here in East Tennessee, moderate to heavy snow is as rare as a slow news Friday in Florida. But last week, I awoke to 2 inches of the white stuff. As I serenely sat waiting the arrival of the latest podcast, my doorbell rang. My neighbor, Lloyd, to whom I'm not related by marriage, was the offending party. Lloyd is a jerk. This is really nice to say this about your boy. In our neighborhood, that is widely accepted. The following conversation took place. Lloyd, hey, you got a snow shovel? Me, good morning, Lloyd. Lloyd, yeah, you got one or not? Me, no, Lloyd, but I do have a piano. Blank stare. Me, have a good day. I like that. I do. I like that. Lloyd is a jerk. That could be the name of the restaurant. Or a rock and roll band. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
May the Lord have mercy on me and my piano.